You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. Offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
And welcome, this is To the Journey.
To the Journey!
I'm your co-host, Tristan Rendell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
That's right, Charlene Schmidt. Tristan Rendell and Charlene Schmidt, we are... Well, you know what? I was having a conversation about this the other day. We were the highest rated Trek FM show, but now since we've brought on Mission Log and started hosting their shows on Trek.fm... They have more reviews than us, so now they're the most highest rated Star Trek show on Trek.fm.
This is true. But you know what? I mean, if we've got to come in second to anybody, Mission Log is perfectly okay with me because I adore their podcast. John and Ken are awesome people. I got to talk with them when I went to Star Trek Las Vegas a year ago. It was 2013. I guess my brain is trying to skip ahead here. and so, you know what? We could eventually maybe catch up. I don't know. They have a very widespread audience. They are one of the most popular Star Trek podcasts out there. So you know what? If we've got to come in second place to them, I'm okay with that. That doesn't hurt very much. I'm very proud to be in that good of company.
I completely agree. And for those of you who like To the Journey, you'll love their podcast and please check it out. But what we're talking about today is we're doing a character analysis of the Borg Queen. But before we get into that, now, Char, you and I were talking on the other side of the room a couple of days ago, and you told me a very interesting story that I'm very jealous of. And would you please share that with the listeners?
Certainly. And I can't believe this hasn't happened to you, whereas it did happen to me. And here is what happened. I ran into a friend of mine just, you know, around town, and started talking, you know, hey, what's up? Just blah, 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 blah. She had another friend with her whom I didn't really know. And apparently, somehow, it came out that this friend of my friend's listens to the Journey. And she's a Fargo resident. She's, you know, same neighborhood as me. And so, Stephanie, if you are out there listening, hello. It was very nice to meet you. And it's awesome to actually run into somebody and say hello to somebody who listens to the podcast.
Yeah, but talk about how she reacted, like how she found out it was you. That's the cool part of the story.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That was a lot of fun, actually, because it was like, that's you? You know? It was just, she was, Stephanie was just like, her eyes lit up. She was just, oh my gosh, that is you. I love that podcast. And she just got so excited, and that got me excited. And I was just feeling the love so hardcore. I just thought, this is so awesome. I never really imagined this happening in the course of our Star Trek podcasting lives, but here we go. I had this moment. It was fantastic. And, you know, I think it's only a matter of time before it happens to you. I mean, you're in the Chicago area. I'm sure there's people in Chicago who listen to the podcast. One of these days, you'll run into a listener yourself. I know you will.
My first reaction was, holy crap, that's an amazing story, and I'm so happy that happened to you. And my second reaction is, man, I'm jealous as hell. And it's just so funny, because like you said, like, you're surprised that it didn't happen to me, because just by the sheer population that we live near, like, you live in Fargo, I live in the Chicagoland area, I just have more nerds near me. But the thing is, I also don't like people, so I don't really hang out with them that much. So, you know, there's that.
Yeah, well, that's okay. You know what I think will happen? What I think is going to happen next year, and I really hope this does happen, you and I are going to meet up in Star Trek Las Vegas. We're going to go around, you know, we'll be just like around the dealer's room, and somebody will come out of the woodwork and recognize us. We're like, you guys host To the Journey. We'll be like, yeah, yes, we do.
Well, I hope that happens, because that would be a lot of fun. And also, listeners, we love interacting with you guys on Twitter, and we love the messages that you send us via email Indeed. And the voicemails and everything like that. And so, you know, it would just be mind-blowing if we actually got to meet you in person. And so, yeah, that great story, and so happy that happened to you. Another thing that I'm excited about, not just meeting the fans or talking with the fans, but that is talking about Voyager, and that's why we do what we do. And the thing that we're talking about today is, as we said mm-hmm. at the top of the show, is the Borg Queen. Now, the Borg Queen has, no matter how you feel about her, you have strong feelings either way. And even if you're shaking your heads in your cars or while you're listening at work saying, oh, no, I don't care about her either way or the other, you're lying. And you're lying to yourself and you're lying to me, most importantly. You either think that she's a fantastic idea or you think she's a horrible idea. I never realized she was so polarizing until I went online and became a member of the online community. So to start off the show, how do you feel, Char, about the Borg Queen?
Oh, boy. I think the longer that I have watched Star Trek, the more I'm in the camp of, I don't know if I like her. And I know why she came to be, because they needed kind of a face, a foil for Star Trek First Contact. Mm-hmm. You know, the writers have said as much. But her on Voyager, I don't get excited when I come across yet another two-parter. And of course she's going to be in it. Because, I mean, once you kind of crack that egg open, it's opening the can of worms. I'm just using every euphemism I possibly can here, I guess. You're opening that can of worms, and of course you've got to include the Borg Queen, because now she's a thing. But I think for an enemy like the Borg, it is unusual to have one person or one entity controlling billions of other drones in this massive network. I would just think, I think Janeway says it in Unimatrix Zero. God, doesn't that give you a headache? Maybe it was Endgame. I'm not sure, but I'm just thinking, yeah, one. One queen. And of course, there's like the whole hive mind concept. I get it. But just think of like if you had one computer controlling the whole internet.
Well, see, I think that's the thing. And what the questions that you raise is questions that everyone is asking, in that they don't really give a lot of answers. And they don't give a lot of answers on screen or on television. And so because of that, a lot of people in charge of Star Trek folklore have ran to the novels and to the comic books and have written up tons and tons of scenarios about how she was made or why she's there, or is there just one of her? Are there multiple queens? You know, like, is there a queen? Like, is it kind of like a governor and mayor? Like, there's a queen for each district of the Borg, you know, like each tertiary adjunct of Unimatrix 01, you know, like there's Unimatrix 02 and Unimatrix 03 and things like that. So there's that possibility. But yeah, like, she raises more questions than she answers, really. And, like, when the Borg was created in Season 2 of Star Trek The Next Generation, it was introduced by Q. He flung the Enterprise-D all the way across the galaxy, met up with the Borg, and then the Borg were a badass, and they were mysterious, and they were weird, and they were truly alien. And they found out that they have a hive mind, that there's no one leader. There's, like, you know, they all work together. And then when First Right. Contact, they came about, they completely flipped that on their head just because they needed a one single antagonist that they could focus on. And so some people say, you know, with the Borg Queen, it's like some people say, like, well, she doesn't really lead the Borg. She brings order to chaos. And that's that everybody keeps referencing that term because that's how she describes herself. Like, I'm the beginning, the end, the one who is many. I am the Borg.
Right.
So she could just be a physical representation of the Borg's will. Like, that's what I try to think of, is that that's what I try to wrap my head around, it is that, like, we may call her the queen and she may look like the leader, but she could just be this conduit that brings all of these voices to a head, where she's the one who totals the votes. She's the one who, like, 5 trillion drones say, yeah, we want to invade Earth, and 6 trillion drones say, no, we got our ass kicked last time. Then she's the one who says, like, okay, then we're not going to invade Earth today. I don't know. Like, I'm just throwing stuff out.
I think you're making it much more of a democracy than the collective really is. I mean, I ultimately think it's much more of a dictatorship. If she wants to invade Earth that day, by golly, they're just going to do it. And if she doesn't feel like it and she wants to do something else, she's going to do that instead. I think it's all up to her. Her drones are her minions. I feel like they're just there to serve her.
But if she was the representation of the drone's will, then she would just be enacting that out, and she would look like a queen when she really wasn't. It was kind of like how she would be a figurehead, where it's kind of like the clone Kalis in the Klingon Empire. He's an emperor, but has no real power. It's up to the people and the chancellor. And so, I don't know. That's just my rationale. It's like, because you can go either way with it. Like, yeah, you can say, like, the way, if you can take it at face value and say, yeah, the queen is the dictator. She's the queen. She's the definition of a queen. Whatever she wants happens. But if you bring in the hive mentality, she could be the figurehead. She could be like the Locutus, where it's a representative that we can interact with. But she's the one that just kind of brings everything together and is the voice of the Borg. I don't know. There's no answer to it. It's all just fan speculation.
Right. Yeah, this was never really defined. And I always found it kind of interesting when we saw episodes of Voyager with the Borg Queen, because she really seemed to busy herself with very focused tasks. You know, she was always kind of after somebody, whether it was trying to capture Seven of Nine and bring her back to the Collective, or if Janeway's tampering with her plan, she's got to focus on that. And so for somebody who is controlling so much with her hybrid of organic and mechanical components there, she really narrows down what she wants to do to a very focused thing. It's like, I'm going to go sit over here and chat with Data for a little while, you know, and try and convince him to get on my side. Stuff like that. I always found that kind of, I don't know. I guess the portrayal of the Borg Queen just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, in that if she really is doing all of these things, she doesn't seem quite as larger than life than I would anticipate. And maybe it's just because it's really hard to articulate how you would portray that. I don't know if that makes any sense. Like, how do you show controlling billions and billions of lives? Like, I think they tried in Unimatrix Zero, where she blows up a cube here and a sphere there.
Yeah.
11,000 drones just gone. I'm going to weed out this little virus that was circulating among the Collective. And it was nothing to her. How or why? I'm a little lost with that, I suppose. And no, there is no good explanation. So I'm going to stop right here before I speculate any further and drone on. Ha ha.
Well, we first see her in Star Trek First Contact, as we stated, and then we saw her in four subsequent episodes, and we didn't see her in any other TV show. Deep Space Nine didn't deal with a Borg. Enterprise dealt with a Borg on a very minimalistic level, although they did think about, apparently there was some early concepts to have Alice Kriga in Enterprise in that regeneration episode, and she would play a female scientist and she would get assimilated, and then that would be the beginning of the Borg. But that didn't really make sense, because they actually talked about what species she was, and she was species 125, which is not the human designation.
I think this is an intriguing idea, though, because they would have had Alice Kriga guest on the episode, and this would have been essentially the genesis of the Borg Queen and why she looks the way that she does and is the way that she is. Apparently, this species of people have extraordinary multitasking capabilities and high brain function, which would explain why she could control the Collective.
Yeah, yeah. It's. I think that's definitely a crazy concept, and that would make sense, that you would assimilate a specific species for a specific trait, which is what they do, but you're like, oh yeah, we need some more Borg Queen, so let's go and get species 125.
Just have like a whole stock of them ready to go, because as we know, they replace the Borg Queen if she dies.
That's right, and that's why it kind of gives credence to the idea that there could be more than one Borg Queen, and that's why it's just a representation of the Borg's will, you know, like, because it doesn't really matter who it is. But the thing is, the question that I raise is that if you can regenerate or make a new Borg Queen, according to film, because there's a lot, like, film and TV standards, because there's a lot of stuff written in the novels, you know, is that the same person? Or because, like, in the TV show, we say, like, oh yeah, I was, you know, I was around 7 or 8 when I was when I was assimilated, and you know, I'm species 125. Well, that's Susanna Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
And does that mean that Alice Krieger was assimilated when she was 7 or 8? Or does that mean that this new Borg queen who has the same consciousness as Alice Krieger was assimilated when she was 7 or 8? These are the kind of mind-numbing questions that are going on because there's no good answer, and it could be anything. It could just be like, oh, they grew organic material and made – or like they grew organic material and made a new Borg queen with Alex Krieger's memories and blah, 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 blah. Or – they assimilated another species 125, and it's combined kind of like the Dax symbiont, where she has all of Alice Krieger's memories, but also all of Susanna Thompson's memories. You know, like it's.
Right. Yeah, we will never know. They never told us. And unless they do tell us in the future, it's pure speculation on our part.
And one thing that is pure speculation is the stuff that's written in the novels, and I know I've referenced that a lot, but I kind of want to go through there's about 4 main creation myths with the Borg Queen, and I wanted to get your opinion on them, and I'll just gloss over them real quick. And there was one that was in the Destiny novels, and it's where they had a species called the Kalar who dedicated their lives to finding the next evolutionary step. They said that they could harness this thing called claytronic atoms, where it was programmable matter, and there was some sort of a subspace tunnel and a feedback pulse, and some Starfleet officers went into a black hole or something and went into the past, and then was on the same planet as these Kalar. And they somehow blended their organic material from the Starfleet officers, and then to the and then with the Kalar, and then thus was the Borg. And one of those Starfleet officers was a female, and she became the Borg Queen.
Okay, I have to admit, I've not read the Destiny trilogy. Please, over at Literary Treks, I hope Matt and Chris aren't screaming at me right now. But this was during kind of my break from Star Trek literature. And so I've not read these. This is an interesting enough idea. I could see this working. How about you?
Well, I feel like this one's a little bit convoluted. The next one, however, from Strange New Worlds 6, which is which has the short story The Beginning. This one is much more intriguing to me, where it was the Borg Queen before she was a Borg Queen. She was a part of a planet, just a regular Joe. And or Susie, whatever you want to say. And their planet was struck down by a deadly disease. And so the scientists on the planet developed bioorganic regenerators with the help of nanotechnology. And
surprise.
That's right. And it eradicated the disease and rebuilt patients' bodies because they would cripple and disintegrate and everything like that. And so the person who was going to become the queen was the first experiment and the test subject. And so they tried it on her, and she became kick-ass and awesome. And she's like, well, I am perfection. Like, I can do anything that I want because I'm much stronger now. I'm much smarter now. And she had her own nanoprobes inside of her. And she's like, you should be like me. And they're like, we don't want to be like you. And she's like, well, you don't have a choice. Neck tubulus.
And so it begins.
And so it began. And so she took over the entire planet. Like, she spread the Borg, like a disease itself, and ironically, that's what they were trying to eradicate. And then once she assimilated the entire planet, she developed ships and technology and boom, set off.
Oh my gosh.
I think that's a really cool story.
Okay, yeah, forget that other idea. I'm sorry, Destiny, but this is awesome. This makes a lot of sense. This sounds like a very compelling story. Again, I've not read this one either. I need to go off and do that, though, because this sounds great.
Yeah, I need to read it too because I haven't read it yet. It's called it's The Beginning in Strange New Worlds 6 for those of you at home. And there's another one called Side Effects, which was I think it's a TOS comic, but I think it was like manga. I think it was anime or something.
Oh, okay.
And it was very similar to the one that we just discussed, but it involved some scientist sent out a whole bunch of expeditions. And they swirled around a black hole so that they could research longer and not die or something, or send their research back. It was a time flux so that they could get centuries of research and send it back home.
Hmm.
And then it was the same thing where they tried it on somebody and blah, 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 blah. So it's basically the same thing, but it didn't sound as interesting as The Beginning. It sounded more convoluted. And then the last creation myth is actually from a Star Trek video game, Legacy, which I was never able to finish because it was too hard for me. but apparently a Vulcan commander mind melds with a Borg and discovers that the collective was created by the probe V'ger. Now, this is nothing new.
Yeah, this controversy has been going on for how long?
Yeah, like ever since we've seen the Borg, people are like, oh, this is because of V'ger. Like, this was because this is all because Commander Decker, you know, melded with V'ger and also with Ilea, and then thus was the birth of the Borg. Well, the time frame doesn't work out, and so with Star Trek Legacy, the video game, they, of course, built in, like, black holes and time travel and everything like that, and that's why it, you know, worked. And so I feel like Star Trek Legacy was just building off of a fan rationale.
Yeah. Okay. I don't have a whole lot to say about that one.
Of those three or four, which one's your favorite?
Oh, by far and away, it's Strange New Worlds, The Beginning. That sounds like one heck of an awesome origin story. And I'm going to get on Half.com and Amazon or wherever, see if I can't find a copy of this, because I really do want to read it now. This sounds like the best explanation of the Borg Queen that I think we could possibly get.
That's what I think, too. And it's totally in my headcanon now.
Yeah, mine too. I'm adopting that. That's in my headcanon. Sort of like how some people swear that the Borg and V'ger are intertwined and whatnot. Okay, that's my equivalent right there.
Yeah.
Very
and now,
cool.
Like the only problem with that one is that if the Queen was around at the birth of the Borg, then why would her species designation be 125? Like the only thing that we'd have to rationale is that this happened when she was 7 or 8, you know, just like she was disease ridden when she was 7 or 8, and so that would maintain truth, and so she could say she was assimilated, like that was her version of, you know, being, you know, reborn or having the disease taken away from her with, you know, so she could still call it assimilation.
Mm-hmm, right.
But the whole species 125 thing. The rationale behind the numbering isn't so much of when they encountered the species, but they must catalog them in a different way.
Hmm. Right. Because you would think, oh, Borg Queen, she's species number one.
Right.
But I don't know.
They're categorized by DNA or advantages to the collective or things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of ways you could explain this away. So I'm really neither here nor there on that. I'm not going to nitpick a detail like that. I mean, the Borg have encountered thousands and thousands of species. 125 is pretty high up there, so works for me.
Works for me. All right, well, we've talked a lot, listeners, about the history of the Borg and the history of the Borg Queen, whether it's imaginary or on screen. But since this is a Voyager podcast, we need to talk about the nitty-gritty. We need to talk about her interactions with the Voyager crew and with Janeway and with Seven. And I guess, you know, it's not that critical to, you know, to dissect it because it's been dissected by us before. Did you, like, Janeway has always been kind of the maternal figure to Seven of Nine.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel about having a competing maternal figure, like a creepy maternal figure?
Kind of like the creepy stranger. Hey, I got some candy. You want to get in my van?
Yeah,
only it's the Borg Queen saying, hey, get back in the cube. I honestly don't have big feelings about it. I see where it's coming from. I can see why the Borg Queen wants Seven back and all that. But it seems like she really handpicks who she's interested in. You know, a lot of them, they're just plain old drones. But for some reason, Seven of Nine is really special. Just like Locutus was. And so she definitely has her favorites.
Mm-hmm.
And Of course, that's all just because of kind of the nepotism you have to have for the story, because those are our main characters. And so I feel like that's all it really is. And therefore, whatever. You know, that we get the whole Janeway being a maternal figure to Seven so much that by the time the Borg Queen wants to interject and is trying to get Seven back into the collective, I'm just thinking, yeah, okay, that makes sense. But I don't get very excited about it. Which is awful, because a lot of times these are big season-ending two-parters, but like I said earlier, I really get burned out on the Borg thing. I get burned out on Seven of Nine and the whole dynamic between Janeway and Seven. I'm just really, like, it feels like more of the same to me. So that's where I'm at with it. What do you think? Have you got more of an opinion than I do?
Well, I've always enjoyed the Boar Queen. I've always enjoyed Alice Krieger. I thought Susanna Thompson did a great job.
And they did.
Yes, and they did. And I've always enjoyed the mystique and the mystery of the Boar Queen. And I like that these questions don't have answers, because it spawns fan fiction, it spawns novels, it spawns conversations and ideas and arguments that will never be subsided because we'll never have the answer.
Right.
And I think that she was treated well in Voyager, and I really liked what they did with her character, and I liked the kind of control that was shown. And I think you're right, like, it is a little weird, like, was she controls billions of drones, or is the voice of billions of drones, that why would they waste their time with just a handful of people? And it just, but at the same token, I like the reason why that happens is because it's a TV show and we're watching it, and these are the characters that we're interested in.
Right, of course.
So, you know, so we have to do stuff like that. One thing that I want to talk about, though, is that not so much origins within the universe, but origins outside of the universe, is that in an early, production meeting or concept meeting for the Borg Queen, the movie Captain EO was mentioned, which is a Michael Jackson movie that came out in 1986.
What?
That's right. It came out in 1986. Wow. And Angelica Houston was the villainous woman in the movie. And she descended from the ceiling on a bunch of black cables and was hoisted above. And that was their, yeah, that was their inspiration for Alice Krieger coming down through like tubes and cords and things like that in First Contact. And if you go back and watch this movie, like, search out, like, there's clips of it on YouTube, Captain EO, as in the letter E and the letter O, and, you know, scrub through and find it, because, like, not only can you absolutely see the resemblance to the Borg Queen, she looks like she could be a part of the Borg, as same, like, the same color scheme, the same kind of Borg texture, all of, like, whether it's on her clothes or on the technology around her or on the walls around her. Like, like, at this, like, when I was looking at it, I was like, oh, this is really cool. And I'm like, oh, this is a straight ripoff.
I was just about to say that. This sounds like they just saw this, thought it was awesome, and said, okay, we're going to clone this. So you're telling me that not only do they have the cables, you know, and then attaching the head to the body and all that, but they've got, like, the green lighting scheme.
Not green lighting scheme. Think about it, like, think about it this way. If the Borg Queen was made in TNG.
Hmm. So she's got a little more duct tape, a little rough around the edges.
Yes, yes. It's like, it's the white face with the black headdress and technology around her,
okay,
and outfit with black cables. And it's the black and gray. And it's a black and gray Borg, not the black and green Borg.
Oh, okay. So, like you said, TNG Borg as opposed to Voyager and First Contact era Borg. One
yes.
thing I do want to say about the way that they portrayed the Borg Queen, or even just the Borg in general, is I do love the cinematography that goes around the Borg Queen. I mean, they really showcase her really well in Voyager with the lighting, the camera angles, the way they kind of swoop overhead on her. Give her this big air of superiority, as they should, because she's the Borg Queen. I feel like they did get that right, even if I don't get that excited about it, I do admire that kind of handiwork with it.
Yeah, I agree too. I think that she was shot very well. I thought giving us a new way of how her body assembles was really cool.
That too, yeah.
I feel like they just up the ante with Voyager. They took First Contact and made it even more badass with how they treated the Borg Queen. Now, they might have overused the Borg, but they definitely they raised the stakes and made it awesome. The only criticism that I have, which is purely aesthetic, is I feel like there was way too much green saturation lighting in Voyager with the Borg Queen. Because, like, when she was in Unimatrix Zero, as in not just the episode, but in the actual realm Unimatrix Zero,
mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, cool, we get to see the Borg Queen of how she used to look like in the First Contact. Because when
right.
she's on the ship, everything's so green and weird that you're just like, what color is she? Like, even Janeway looks green there because
mm-hmm.
there's so much harsh green lighting.
I don't mind that myself, but yeah, they definitely took that and ran with it for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, that was our episode on the character analysis of the Borg Queen. Hopefully we covered things that you didn't know. That's one thing that we tried to set out and achieve with this episode, is that everybody, you know, talks about stuff you already know. Everybody talks about the episodes, the movie, and how she looks and how she interacts with Janeway and Seven and Picard. But we really wanted to talk about the stuff behind the scenes and with the novels and how she was created and everything like that. So hopefully you learned something in this podcast today.
I know that I did, and I need to go read more of the Star Trek novels that I've missed, just because I actually find that a lot more interesting than what we have seen on screen for all these years. We all know this. The behind-the-scenes stuff, definitely a lot more interesting. And I've got to go check out Captain EO now, too, and see the true origin of the Borg Queen. But the Borg Queen is not the only thing that we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week, and so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
And then next week, it's like, hey, Worf, what's going on? He's like, oh, not much. Just, you know, yeah, walking around the bridge. Like I didn't have my spine grown, you know, last week.
Earl Grey.
You know, he's on the Enterprise. He doesn't have to be written into the movie because, hey, he's on the Enterprise. Everyone's on the Enterprise.
He gets,
you know,
a chair.
He gets a chair. I mean, the whole beginning is all about his promotion. Yeah, exactly.
It's basically a Worf-centered movie now that I think about it.
The Orb.
Even Odo wasn't able to keep his, you know, quote-unquote hands clean. The fact that he has this kind of sordid past that we didn't really know about until now is really, really interesting.
To the journey!
I think the audience by and large, kind of saw Data as a machine and was probably a little more on the side of Maddox, as in Data is it, not he, and that sort of a thing, without even realizing it. And then Measure of a Man took us from that point to, you know what? This guy has the right to choose.
Warp 5.
The TV viewer who doesn't know anything about that, they're probably more like the actual people of the Enterprise era, where the idea that we would have these starships that can take us into the depths of the galaxy at Warp 5, this is all new for them as well.
The Ready Room.
Deep Space Nine is closer to the original series than any other Star Trek show in terms of ideals and... yeah, conflict. There is conflict in the original series.
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
Wow. What's interesting, though, is this isn't even a threat. I mean, that be your last battlefield. It was a threat that Kirk was making in this episode. Picard's just like, yeah, we don't know who's taking our ship, and nobody's allowed to have our ship, so you know, let's blow it up.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Although there is a certain darker aspect to the story than, let's say, one would find in Roddenberry's version of humanity, there is also room for hope.
Literary Treks.
I can see that Jean-Luc might have told her, you know, I was reading Janeway's logs, and can you believe that Q got married and has a son?
Continuing Mission.
You're watching the Man Trap, and then for no reason at all, they go into the botany... well, I want to call it the botany bay, even though I know that's not right. The botanical...
I think it's just botany room.
The botany room. And there's this person's hand in a pink glove as a space plant. And you're just like, what?
Melodic Treks.
The latest Thompson Holiday Company advert in the United Kingdom features William Shatner's rendition of the Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody.
Axanar, the official podcast.
And as soon as I got back to L.A., I sat down and in about 3 or 4 days wrote this demo suite of 4 cues. And, you know, thankfully it resonated with Alec and Christian, and, you know, here we are.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We are available on pretty much any kind of platform that you please, whether it's Apple and iTunes, or if you have an Android, a Windows, Xbox, Zune, you name it, we are there. And not only do we have every platform available, we have gazillions of podcasts on the Trek FM network these days. We cover, I think, such a great realm of the Star Trek universe these days that it would be virtually impossible to get all these shows out to you these days without the help of a sponsor. So let's hear about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
Well, we mentioned earlier in the show that we love hearing your comments. We love communicating with you guys, and there's several ways that you can do that. And the first way is to go to trek.fm/contact if you want to write us a message. That gets to us via email, and we will write back to you. Otherwise, if you're on Twitter, we love to interact with our listeners on Twitter. I am O the Profanity, and who are you, Tristan?
I'm at the Insane Robin.
So, if you have a comment or a question or an episode suggestion, we love to get those too. We would love to hear from you via Twitter. Also, if you do have an episode suggestion, we have a handy new tool for you to help you out on this. So what we have is a list of every single episode that we have done of To the Journey, every topic that we have covered. And what we would love for you to do, this would help us out so greatly, is to make sure that your topic has not been covered before, because we're fast approaching 100 now. Go to trek.fm/TTJ and you'll get the link from there. If you'll make sure that we haven't covered your topic before, we'd love to hear it.
It's like, yeah, people, we love getting topic suggestions. We get them literally every single day. And so it really would help us out if you guys could go to this new link and check it out before you suggest it, because we get a lot of the same suggestions all the time. And a lot of times we'll have already talked about it. And that way you get to hear about it automatically. That's instant gratification. You have an idea and then bam, you can listen to us talk about it right away.
Yeah, absolutely.
One other thing that you can log into and listen to and find out is my new show, The Nerd Party, and you can go to thenerdparty.com or go to facebook.com/thenerdparty, and you can find all the links that you could ever need to listen to my new show with Matt Hansen. It's just a general geek podcast, but we mainly talk about movies. And we just got done with our Halloween episode and also an X-Men episode, and we talk about, current stuff in the news, like the whole Marvel announcements that are going on. So please, if you're a To the Journey fan, go there and check us out.
And I can't recommend it highly enough. I'm not nearly as much of a movie buff or even just a general geekery buff as you guys are, but I still listen to it because, for one thing, it's informative. But then I just like listening to two of my favorite people riff and talk. You guys have a great chemistry going. It's a lot of fun to listen to. So if you haven't listened to that yet, folks, definitely give that a listen.
Well, an endorsement from Char is quite the endorsement, so thank you very much.
All right. Well, we got to look forward now to next week. What are we up to?
Next week, we are doing an episode rewrite of the B'Elanna episode, Remember.
That's right. This is a season 3 episode where, honestly, I don't remember a whole lot about it.
And that could be the great reason why we need to rewrite it. But you'll have to tune in next week to hear it. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!